Well, it's just really good to be here and to share with you. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. My wife Janelle is here with me. Our two sons are in New Believers class, preparing for baptism, so they're back at Nickel Mines this morning. But just really good to be here and to see each one of you, have this special time together, and extra special to have Sam and his family share a little bit later on. Sam and Kathy, their family are very, very good friends of ours and appreciate them very much, and so look forward to hearing some of their stories as well. But it's just good to be here. This fall, I made a goal to visit six churches this fall that have stood behind and been partners with us at Camp Andrews faithfully. And as I was thinking about what church to call and what to arrange, Life Fellowship was right at the top of the list because you as a church have been partners in ministry at Camp Andrews very faithfully. See, Clyde here has served on the board. If I need anything hauled with a truck, I just call Elvin and it's hauled. Just that simple. And many of you help with the corn when we have corn and different volunteers in different ways. And just really appreciate your partnership. And I just, for fun, I look back and since 2000 till today, how much do you think your church has given to the ministry of Camp Andrews in offerings? $18,222. Isn't that amazing? That's incredible. All through the years, last 10 years, and we just thank you personally. And that's the privilege of coming into these churches, is just to see your faces and to thank you personally for your partnership, because there is no way in the world Camp Andrews would exist, and that's the fact, without partners like you. That's just the reality. Our rates are almost half of what it actually costs for the children to come to camp, and so that difference is made up through your gifts and volunteers in different ways. It's crucial for camp to continue. So thank you so much. I just wonder if I'd ask you this morning, turn to Matthew 18 if you have a minute there. But I just wonder if I asked you this morning, does God really, you know, does he really care about children, reaching children while they're still young with the gospel? Does he really care? Is his heart really towards the children? This verse, when I found it, has been kind of like my life verse now, and I've looked at it many times as a encouragement to me that what really is the Father heart of God for children? How does he feel about them? What is his heart? When you look at his heart, what does it say? Matthew chapter 18, verse 14. Just one verse for now. Verse 14 says, "Even so, it is not the will of your Father which is in heaven that one of these little ones, not one of these little ones, not one of these little ones should perish." That's what he says, Jesus says, is the Father heart of God. That not one of these little ones should perish. That is what's close to his heart. I think a little boy that came to camp, and he was kind of acting up and causing trouble and just getting into things, and usually that's an indicator of something else going on inside. In fact, almost always. So counselor kind of pulled him aside and just had some one-on-one time with him, talking with him, and said, why don't you try to draw a picture, the counselor told him. Draw a picture of your family back home in New York City. So he says, okay. So he got a piece of paper out, started drawing a picture, and he drew his mom and his sister and his brother, all the way down the line, you know, and himself. And down in the corner of the paper, he drew a garbage can. Garbage can. And then after he was all done, his counselor said, "Well, could you explain your picture to me, please?" He said, "Oh yeah, this picture is my mom, is my sister, is me." And the counselor says, "So what's with the garbage can? Why is that there?" He said, "Well, that's where my dad is. He's in there, and that's where he belongs. Well, the way he treated us, and treated my family, and left my mom, that's where he belongs." And he started getting pretty emotional about it. And it was pretty obvious what some things were going on in his heart that hurt very, very deeply. To have a father that would desert his mother and desert his family. And so he was acting out to try to get attention, get acceptance, and somehow find a place to belong and to kind of fill that void and that hollow. I took one boy on the ropes course just this past summer. Jared was his name. He's about 11 years old. And He wasn't acting up. He wasn't bad. He was just wandering off all the time, just kind of wandering off and just kind of in his own little world. And I kept trying to pull him back into the group, pull him back into the group. He just kept kind of wandering off. And then after we finished the ropes course, I talked to his counselor. I said, you might want to spend some time with Jared. I think there's some things that are pretty heavy on his mind. And so his counselor did that. He pulled Jared aside, and over lunchtime, they ate lunch together and just kind of started talking, started opening up. And Jared says, actually, I'm really mad at my dad because he is serving in Iraq right now. In Iraq, he could call me, he could email me, he could write me, but he doesn't. It's like he deserted me. He doesn't even care I exist anymore. I don't even have a dad anymore. And it was just the lonely ache in his heart for his dad to connect with his dad, for his dad to care that he exists. And as the counselor started sharing with him and started showing him that he cares and that Jesus cares, the boy started opening up and started warming up. And by Friday, that boy was a different Jared. He wasn't the same Jared as Monday. He found somebody that he could connect with and know that care, the father heart of love for him, know that he cares deeply about him. Now let's look a little, you have your Bibles open. We looked at verse 14. Let's look at verses 10 through 13. And let's look a little more closely at what is the father, what does it mean that the father is not willing that one of these little ones should perish? Verse 10 says, take heed that you despise not one of these little ones, for I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. For the Son of Man is come to save that which is lost. How think ye, if a man have 100 sheep, and one of them be gone astray, doth he not leave the 99, and goeth into the mountains, and seeketh that which is gone astray? And if so be that he find it, verily I say unto you, he rejoiceth more over that sheep than over the 99 which went not astray. And then verse 14 again. Even so, it is not the will of your Father which is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. So here's a shepherd. He has 100 sheep. You know the story. You heard it many times. But he's got 99 sheep back home, and only one is missing. So he comes home, and he counts them going into the fold probably. 21, 22, 96, 97, 98, 99. Only 99. Counts them again probably. Nope, only 99. One's missing. What would you do if you were that shepherd? You have to understand, supper is ready at the house. Mom's got supper ready, and it's smelling really good. He probably can smell it all the way out there at the sheep pen. It's smelling really good, and it's nice and warm inside. It's been drizzling and cold and damp and raining all day. He's just about soaked to the bone. He's cold. He can't wait. But the last hour, he just, 5 o'clock's coming, 6 o'clock, whatever his closing time is. I can't wait to get back home. Oh, all days for one to be missing. Why has it got to be today? Supper's ready. I want to play with my children tonight. I was looking forward so much to being home with them. Why today? Anyway, I know which one that was. And that little scoundrel, it's his own fault he got lost. Because I didn't tell him to get lost. It's his own fault. He knew where we were and we were all together here. It's his own fault. If he wants to get lost, let him be lost. Right? He deserves it. Made his choices. Made his bed, he's going to lay in it. If he finds a bed tonight. If he doesn't, I don't really care. You know, that's what the shepherd thought. It might have went through his mind. As I'm talking, think about your heart for lost, okay? So then the shepherd says, no, wait a minute here. I have 99, but I need to find that one lost sheep. I need to find him. I got to go out there. So he runs into the house, tells his wife, hey, I don't know when I'm going to be back, but I got one lost sheep. I got to go find him. I hope he can keep supper ready, but I'll be back as soon as I can. Sorry. I got to go. I got to find that one lost sheep. So he runs out into the cold, and it's damp. It's starting to rain a little harder. It's getting dark and cold. And he's got to, you know, sheep don't just get lost out in the middle of the field usually. They get lost over the cliffs. So he's got to reach over the cliffs And it's risky because it's cold, it's wet, rocks are slippery. I mean, he could end up out there, right, over the cliff. So it's risky. It takes sacrificing to get out there and try to find this one lost sheep that should have known better. But he's got to find it because in his heart, he loves that lost sheep. He loves that sheep dearly. He cares about it. He's got to find it. He's not satisfied until he does find it. So he goes looking and looking and calling and saying, "Where are you? Are you out there?" He's calling. He knows the sheep by name, and he's calling. And he's calling. He's calling until he finally hears it. He hears that sheep, bah, just a little bah. And his heart skips and jumps, and he takes off for that noise where he hears that sheep and runs over there, looks over there, and he finds it. And when he gets that sheep up in his arms, he spanks it good. "What are you doing getting lost? I miss my supper over you." Think so? We laugh because we've been there, right? No, I bet he held that lamb close to his arms and said, "Oh, I'm so glad I found you. Wow, you're worth looking for. You're worth looking for." And he holds it close to his heart, dries it off underneath his coat, carries it all the way back home. Not only that, but says he throws a party, he rejoices, calls his friends, "Hey, I found my sheep." It's not just, "Yeah, I found my sheep. About time." No, he's excited, he's rejoicing because it's in his heart to care about that sheep and to find it. And he's rejoicing because he found a sheep. So what about you and I? People that are lost, that don't know the Father heart of love, God. Young people are starting to go into Lancaster, right? Went to LBC this summer. Now you're going to Lancaster Monday nights, right? It's not always going to be easy. Give me some Monday nights you're going to say, "Why in the world did we start doing this? It's hard work." Is that right? Maybe you already felt that way sometimes. But it's not always easy. You think camp is just one big party? Like we just down there, just sit down there by the campfire and just have a party all summer and all year round? Well, it's fun, but there's times you wonder why. You know, we'd have a perfect camp if we just didn't have any campers. Isn't that a terrible thought? You know, if all the campers went home, this camp would be so peaceful. It's a terrible thought, but sometimes our humanness takes over and we get tired. It's hard work. It takes sacrifice. I skip suppers because something I got to do, take care about a camp or whatever. It takes sacrifice and commitment. But is it worth it? Is it worth it? Is it close to the Father heart of God? That's the Father heart of God, just like that shepherd. He's willing to sacrifice. He's willing to do it all, anything he could to find that lost sheep. That was the deepest. It was deep down in his heart to find that lost sheep. He cared deeply about finding that sheep. He wasn't going to sleep that night until he found it. There was a passion. There was a commitment and a love for that lost sheep that drove him out there to do that. What he did. Think of one young man who came home from Vietnam. True story. Came home from Vietnam after he served in the war over there. And he was flying home and had a layover in California. And he was flying home to Boston. And when he had a layover in California, he said, "Well, hey, I'll call my mom and tell him we're halfway there and getting close." And so he calls his mom and he says, "Oh, mom, by the way, do you mind if I bring a friend home with me?" And mom says, "Oh, I don't know. We don't have much room, but what do you have in mind?" "Well, you need to know something about this friend, though. He kind of got banged up over in the war. He's missing one eye. He's missing one arm. He's missing one leg. And his face is kind of disfigured. So he takes a lot of care. But he's a good friend of mine. And so I was wondering if we could take him into our home." And his mom says, "Oh, I don't know. That sounds like a lot of work. How about just a couple days?" No, his son said, no, this is a friend of mine. We, you know, this is really important to me, Mom. I don't mean just a couple days. I mean permanently, like take him into our home." His mom says, there's no way I can do that. There's no way I can do that. No, sorry, son. I, I wish you had asked me earlier, but there's just no way I can do that. Phone clicked. 4 hours later, Mom got a call from California from the police. Police said, "We have a report here that someone took his life. And this someone has one arm, one leg, one eye missing. His face is kind of disfigured. And we checked his ID that he had on him. And it turns out that he's your son. And we just called to tell you that he took his life." I've been in situations like that. It seemed like the sacrifice is too big. I don't got time for that. How can we ever do that? What is the Father's heart for those in need? I like my comfortable life a little bit too much, don't I? I like it so comfortable. I like it controlled. I like it organized. I like it safe, and I like it warm. I like a good hot supper at night. I like things the way I'm used to having them. But the Father's heart is that not one of these little ones should perish. Not one of them should perish. And the question I ask is, what is God calling me to do? What is my part in reaching these that do not know him? I'm going to share a few pictures with you about Camp Andrews, the ministry down there. Been down there for about 18 years, and the camp has been going for about 35 years, I guess, since 73. 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, there's a group from Honeybrook Youth Center. Some of you help with Honeybrook Youth Center, I think, right? A group of 21 boys came to Camp Andrews for the weekend retreat, which we have all year round, of course. And there was 21 guys sitting there, standing there in a circle, going out to the ropes course, and I had a thrill of my life because these are all guys that I remember when they were little kids growing up. Now they're too old to come to camp. They're in their 18 to 25 years old probably. They're all gathering together in a circle there. So I said, "So what do you remember about camp 10 years ago, 15 years? What do you remember about camp? What are some memories you have?" So one guy says, "Oh, I remember the zip line. Oh, that was fun. I remember underground church after dark. You have to be there to see that. That's quite a game." And then a couple said, then a guy right over here, two doors down, said, "I remember asking Jesus into my heart at camp, and he's still in there." And that was such a thrill to hear his testimony. Then young man over here, standing about over here, he said, Josh Troop, big guy. I mean, when he was a camper, he was bigger yet. He must have been at least 350, you know, big, big guy. He says, "I remember the truss fall." We'll see that picture in just a minute, but he was up on the truss fall. Yeah, you know where I'm going with this, right? It's about this high where you got to stand up there. And his whole cabin was down here getting ready to hold him. And he was up there ready to go on the truss fall. And he couldn't go. And if I was 350, I don't know if I would have went. But he was up there waiting and trying so hard to go. And he just didn't want to give up. He wanted so bad to trust these group of friends that he knew he cared about him and would catch him. So he stayed there. He stayed there 45 minutes up on that stump trying to go. And his counselor was there waiting for him and saying, "We're going to stick here. We're not going anywhere. We're going to stay right here until you go." And he kept encouraging. 45 minutes later, he finally went. And they caught him. It was not easy, but they caught him. He says, "That event changed my life forever. When I fell and I knew you guys caught me and I knew I could trust you and I finally found somebody that I could trust, it changed my life forever. And to this day, I can just remember it like it was yesterday. I could finally trust somebody. I could finally trust God save me." Huh, that just touches my heart because, you know, you're there at camp and you hear 600 kids all summer, you know, and you wonder, we hope we're doing some good, and you hear some testimonies, but when it's 10 years later, and they still have that testimony, and God's still doing a work in their heart, you're like, yes, it is worth it. That's the Father heart of God, to reach them while they're still boys. Reach them while they're still young. Reach them while they're still teachable, before they've really messed up their lives and made some bad choices. But camp's purpose is to provide rustic, affordable camp facilities in a natural Christian environment conducive to introducing urban youth to Jesus. And our theme verse is, the first thing Andrew did was bring Peter to meet Jesus. Young lives from Lancaster. These girls are from Lancaster City, actually, from Tuesday Church. Girls and boys from Lancaster City, then Fellowship Haven in D.C., and Honeybrook Youth Center, and Gap Boys Clubs, and Philadelphia 6th Street Mission, and then followers of Jesus from New York City. Children from all over who love to have fun, love to have a friend, love to wring their counselor's neck, and just to show that they care, love to climb trees and enjoy the great things of nature. Amani here has been coming for like 8 years from 6th Street. If you know, if you meet her, you'll never forget her. She's just like a live wire. She's always a handful. This is her last year this past summer. She's 15. She was just a handful. On Wednesday, she was a wreck. But you stick with her. You keep loving her. And by Friday, she was a different girl. You're just hanging in there with her. What a difference it makes. And as they come, these are the numbers of people that come each year. The past 3 years, just to give you a little comparison. Weekend as well as week. Week campers are Monday to Friday. The weekend, of course, is the weekend. Ropes course. We already talked about that a little bit. That's where the trust fall is. And you have team building. There's the trust fall. Guys getting ready to fall. Yeah, what a feeling when you fall and you, boy, I just hope they catch me. But building trust, because trust is so crucial in relationships, but trust has been broken so often, and now we just lost it. And we got it back. And there it is again. Trust is broken so many times. So many times. And yet to show them they can forgive, they can trust again, there's still hope to trust again. That is the key, that we love them and care about them. And climbing over a wall, took a group of guys on Friday over the wall. Man, they worked, they had this big guy, I don't know how much he weighed, but I'm guessing over 300. And the rest of the guys were just little skinny guys. And they were determined to get their big, they called them Big O, I wonder why. But anyway, they called them Big O, and they were trying to get them over this wall, and they must have worked 20 minutes. And they worked and worked, and finally they drug them up over top. And they were just cheering, yeah, we work as a team. We get them all across. What a great sense of accomplishment. Well, I'm going to start talking about the maze, because we're going to talk about that, we're going to see that in just a minute. The maze is a new element on the ropes course, where you take them in, blindfolded, and just did this on Friday again, took the group into the maze and blindfolded. And there's a bunch of ropes and stuff, and there's no way out. Okay, you don't tell them that, but there's no way out. But you tell them you're lost in a jungle, and you try to find your way out. So here they're blindfolded, and they're groping along these different ropes, and there's tricky things to kind of throw them off, you know, and they're groping around there in the dark, and they're feeling like they're in the dark, and they're trying to find their way. But then I say one thing. I say, if you need any help, just raise your hand, and I'll be right here. I'm not blindfolded. I know the way. If you just raise your hand, I'm right here and I'll help you. And nobody raises their hand. They keep on looking, keep on looking. Hey, did you find a way out yet? No. They keep looking, keep looking. They can't find a way. Finally, one guy raises his hand. So I quietly walk over to him, grab his hand, and take him out, open up the gate, and take them out and close the gate again. So everybody else is still groping. Hey, where did Jimmy go? We don't know where Jimmy went. What happened to Jimmy? Nobody knows. They're still looking for their way out. Where is the opening? Where's the way out? They're looking, they're looking, they're looking. They're trying to find their way out. Hey, you're good, Tim. Right there is where we need to be. There's the maze. They're looking around, trying to find their way out. There's no way. And then I finally, this is the clincher, I finally say, I need to tell you guys something. I'm right here. I can see. If you need any help, just raise your hand. But there is no way out. And if you need any help, just raise your hand. They still don't raise their hand. They're still looking for the way out. And they keep looking. And we laugh about that, but how about any of us? How hard is it to be humble enough to say, God, I need your help. Our brother, I need you to stand with me and pray for me because I'm facing a battle and I need your support. How easy is that? We know we need it, but it's still hard, isn't it? So these boys are feeling this firsthand, how that feels like. And so finally, they finally raise all their hands. They finally get out. And they finally get out. Finally find the way out. One group was there 30 minutes afterwards talking about what it felt like, that whole experience, and how it felt to be lost and all alone. And one boy says, this is like 15-year-old boys, tough, strong New York City guys, right? He said, that felt the same way I felt the night I tried to take my life. The night I stabbed myself to try to take my life and ended up in ICU in the hospital for a couple weeks recovering. That's exactly how I felt. I felt like there was no hope. There was no one around. I felt the despair and the loneliness. And he started breaking down and crying in front of his buddies. And then another guy started sharing. And soon a couple of them were crying. Because there's something about an experience like that that brings something home, triggers something deep in their hearts of an experience back home in real life. And then you can start talking about them. So what did it feel like? And so where was God when that happened? And where is the Father heart of God when you're going through something like that? You can bring the power of the gospel in a way that they're open, they're soft, their hearts are ready to hear. Just powerful how God can work in the middle of those situations. Then there's some great fun things we do too. Climbing wall, about a 40-foot high wall. You strap on your harness and up you go. Up over the obstacles and helping each other get up across. And those outcroppings are tough to get around. They love the challenge. Gritting their teeth all the way to the top. And then the vertical playground is brand new this year. It's about 50 feet high. And the difference about this is, see all those obstacles all the way up through there? They have to work as a team. There's no way one person could climb it. There's no way. So you work as a team and you help each other and you hold each other and you pull each other up and you work together all the way up. And it can take a half an hour, 45 minutes, but you work as a team and you recognize that you need your brother. You need your sister to back you up and to stand with you. And we went to sleep again. So next year we'd like to do like the climbing wall that's about 50 feet high. Now I want to do a rappelling where you rappel off the back of it. You start up on top, and you rappel off the back, and you have to trust and learn what it means to trust, even when you're not sure if that rope is really going to hold, and learn how to trust. And then we talk about how difficult it is to trust, how difficult it is to forgive after you've been dropped. Then the giant swing. How many went on the giant swing already? Anybody go on the giant swing? Good. Yes, you get harnessed in. You get pulled up. There's a climbing wall in the background there, but you get pulled up. Your whole cabin has to pull you up to the top, and then you let go and swing and upside down if you want to because you have a full body harness. But nothing like being a child or a young person just having a great time on the zip line as well. Zip line's been there for a little while. When you go as a team, it's more fun. You get go together. Like one guy says, you'll see a little bit later, sometimes they sit there and they say, I can't jump. There's no way I'm going to be able to do this. But when a friend comes with them, yeah, then I can. And we talk about that, facing your fears, what difference it makes when you have somebody beside you, walking with you, facing things. Craft time and join learning to make something. There's the older generation teaching younger. Isn't that a beautiful picture? Old grandpa just loves boys and teaching them how to build things. And then look at the pride in their faces. Look what I made. I made this. I'm going to take it home and show my mom, my grandma. There's faithful Ruthie Guckenauer teaching cooking class, teaching how to bake cookies for the New York City girls. She comes down each week for that. And wow, look what I made. And they serve it for dessert for the next meal. And said, I made them. Enjoy good games, get a little bit muddy once in a while. And nothing like a hot pool. Hot pool, no, cold pool on a hot day, right? This boy, he's ready to go. Yes, I love that picture. Just couldn't wait to jump in. Enjoy some good climbing the wall in the pool as well. Tubing down the Peckway Creek, just right down the road here. Things I like best about camp, in their own words, they said, making it to the top of the rock wall, or the Thursday bonfire, swimming, eating, zipline. I thought I was going to fall, but God didn't let me. Becoming a man. Now, how do you become a man in 1 week? Monday night, Parker Esch has a vision to show these boys what it means to be a man. It takes the oldest group of boys. They get them out of bed. They thought they're going to bed, but they get them out about 10 o'clock at night, and say, hey guys, we're not going to bed. We're the oldest cabin. We got some men work to do yet. So they go out, and they go out till about 2 in the morning. And the first thing they do is they start talking about what it means to leave boyhood behind and become a man. Because you have to understand, most of them, if not all of them, haven't had a dad to show them what it means to be a godly man. Yeah, they have the pictures and the movies and whatever about immorality and making lots of money and exploiting people, but what does it mean to be a godly man? So they talk about that. In fact, they start off with a flower vase. And they say, this flower vase represents femininity and ladies. And we're going to take this flower vase with us throughout the whole evening. And this represents the precious way God created women. And we're going to honor it and take it with us all evening. And so they took it down the zip line very, very carefully. They took it up over the climbing wall very, very carefully. They want to make sure they didn't spill it or hurt it. And they were learning what it means to honor women and not exploit them or use them. That's just one example. But they also talked about cutting things from the past and overcoming fears and really being godly men. And then at the end, they had a certificate that was signed by their counselors and affirming them as young men. And what a stepping stone. They'll never forget that experience of men in their lives for the first time affirming them and believing in them. Whoops, I went too fast now. Where are we? Here we go. And a chapel time, of course, is a key time. Hey, there's your daughter. Is she here tonight? This morning? Claudia? No, not Claudia. Yeah? Leading worship? Did a great job. And chapel time. It's time to learn a lot of things like what faith is, that it's a good feeling when I got saved, that if nobody loves you, Jesus still does, that God is looking out for me, even if it doesn't seem like it sometimes, that God is still faithful. He's always with me every step of the way, no matter what. And then these girls from Honeybrook, at the end of the week, they took their stakes, they wrote their name and the date on, took them out into the woods, and drove them down into the dirt and said, today I've chosen to follow God. They signed a certificate, declaration of faith, commitment to follow Christ. What a beautiful sight that is, making that commitment. This is one testimony. One of the girls says, to give myself totally over to God and be bold, this is my last year and final time I can go to camp. This camp, I gave myself to God, started reading my Bible, and grew as a person. This camp can mean the difference in anyone who comes. Thank you for sponsoring me. You've done so much more for me than you know. From her heart, thanking you for your part in making it possible. Bible memory, hiding God's word in their hearts. Never forget. Banquets is something that we did new this year. Did a couple times. The girls just love to dress up. They love to get all good looking and put on their best clothes. But there's a point to this. And they get all dressed up and they get flowers in their hair and so on. And then they wrote down on a piece of paper things that they regret or things that they're, sorry about. They wrote them down on a piece of paper and then they took them out to the campfire and put them in the fire and burned them. Confess them to God, sins in their past, whatever, burned them. And then they took those ashes after they had burned them. They took those ashes and they brought those ashes in little bitty bags. They took this cross was set up at the banquet up where they were having this special dinner together. And they took their bags of ashes and they brought them up to the cross and they laid the ashes on the cross and they took a red rose instead. And that was a symbol of bringing ashes, bringing their brokenness, and receiving new life, new hope, trading beauty for ashes. And what a picture that was to them of that freedom from sin, freedom to follow Christ with all their heart. And then in nature, of course, they learn a lot of things as well. A lot of things like how to catch crayfish, that God is more powerful than anything. They learned that one week they every day they took something in nature and said how that is like God is, like God's character. So for the first day they said God is like light, then God is satisfying like water, how God's nature is revealed in water. And then a solid rock was like a refuge, strength. They could see the big rock at camp there, and they say, well, God is like a refuge I can trust. He is always there with me. And a consuming fire. He can be a welcoming fire as well as a fire of judgment. It's my choice which one, which God I experience in my life. And we'll just keep going. And nature, you know, they do creek walks, they catch crayfish, and they eat crayfish. And they start to learn to appreciate nature because the nature they know is just scary, like movies where you have snakes and monsters and stuff. But in nature, if you respect it, and you can learn to appreciate it. I mean, you have one girl in just a minute here you're going to see holding a 4-foot black snake and not even scared. They're harmless if you treat them right. And how many of you ladies want to carry a 4-foot black snake around? Pretty brave girl, right? But just different things. They recognize that nature is not something you have to be scared of or are worried about, but it's part of God's creation. What do you say, Tim? Is it something I did? The fun of technology when it doesn't work quite right. I'm trying to think ahead to the other pictures here quick, but I don't have them memorized quite that well. Oh, the canoe trips coming up in just a little bit. Canoe trips called Bob. How many of you have been on a canoe trip at Camp Andrews before? Some of you have been, right? Yep. All right. They're on one now, actually. The guys are out and the girls are out. Two trips at the same time. We call them personal development trips. This is for Mennonite young people. They're out of school already and want to really go somewhere in deeper in discipleship and really experiencing who God is in a special way. They take a solo time where they spend a whole 24 hours just by themselves with God. Different things that really stretch them emotionally, spiritually. I could read testimony page after page of the transformation in their lives as they met God in nature in that way. It just opened up their eyes to who God really is. And when you have conflicts and things come around, I mean, you're just there. You 10, 12, whatever it is, you're there and there's no running away. You're right there. And when there's conflicts, you got to work it out. You can't just go off and hide somewhere. You're there together. And to learn to work through those things. And where's the anger coming from? Where's all the fear coming from? Why is it so hard to trust my canoe mate to paddle down this rapids? And they talk about things. It's not just a happy camping trip. There's very intentional goals. And in the summertime, it's inner city children, just like the camp is, where it's inner city children go out. And people said, that will never work. Inner city children are scared to death of nature. They'll never step once in a canoe. It's impossible. But you know what the key is? Counselors go with them that they know personally and have built a relationship with them. They built a relationship with them. And so when they go out there, they know they can trust their counselor because of the relationship they have with them already. And that's why it works. And then they can build that relationship and build on that. Hey, what do you know? There it is. Just what we were talking about. Hike, paddling down the river, going through the rapids, tough times. Climbing up a rock and jumping into the creek, swinging out in the rope, and just having some good bonding time, catching a couple fish, lots of good hugs, arms around each other, and say, let me pray for you, brother. This is a personal development trip where they're spending time in the peaceful water, hearing God speak all alone with God, one-on-one time, some scary things like rappelling down a rock cliff, and the victory that can come as they grapple with different issues all the way at the end of the trip. Some of you know, most of you know already, that there's winter retreats happen at camp all year round. 50 or so, the 52 weekends, there's a group there, even in the middle of the snowstorms last winter. There was never a weekend where nobody was there. Somebody always came, even through all those snowstorms. This group from Honeybrook came this time. For those of you who like numbers, this compares number of guests all year round for each year. And the number of groups, so you see a little uptick from last year, just packing them in anywhere we possibly can, but pretty much full. 51 out of 52 weekends, there was somebody there at camp, and 46 of the weekends, the camp was full, packed full. Usually 6 months ahead, the camp is booked full. There's the camper days per year. Expenses dropped just a little bit last year. Try to find ways. Income dropped, but every year so far in camp's history, income has always been greater than expenses. And we praise God for his provision that way. So, of course, your part is praying. Prayer warriors are so key. making camp what it is, and gifts and volunteers. Here's the corn day. How many of you are here for the corn day? There's quite a few of you, I think. And there's Mary Faye and Amy cutting up corn. We had an army. I mean, there was a huge group of people. Elvin and Ruth were there too, and just a great group of people. In the kitchen, we need volunteers help in the kitchen almost every weekend. And if any of you would like to get involved in ministry, that's a key way. Ladies, girls, say, yeah, I'd love to help in the kitchen sometimes every couple months. That's a key need that we depend on greatly. So the new vision is the Oakview Lodge. Lord willing, this week, we hope to have the final permits come in. The township meeting is Thursday night. The county things are supposed to get done. The building inspector is supposed to get done. Everything is kind of coming to a funnel here. But this week, Lord willing, be praying about that if you would, that all the approvals do come through Thursday night. The township can approve it, and we can start pouring footers and getting started. There'll be 12 rooms, 12 separate lodging rooms with 6 beds in each room, with a private bathroom and geared for young people with bunk beds, and then 2 large meeting rooms as well. This is where it positions, if you know how camp looks, and it's behind the baseball backstop there, between the pool and the backstop. It's where it'll be built. The greatest thing is that there'll be a potential of reaching 65% more youth than now, 7,500 instead of 4,500. It just really opened doors for ministry. If this building was built this fall, we could have filled it every weekend this fall of all the people that we had to turn away for lack of space. So it's a need that we just can't wait to see built. So far, given to date, $659,093. Isn't that incredible? Just since March of last year, that much has been given, because people have the Father heart of God and care about not one of these little ones perishing. That's as simple as that. Total need is $795. And that $795, that's expecting all the labor to be donated. So we're going to be depending quite heavily on contractors. And already I've talked to a contractor, and he says, you know, we've really had a tough year. I'm not sure how much we can volunteer. And so it might be tougher than any other building project we've had to get volunteer contractors. So if any of you are contractors or just love to help, pitch in and help in any way, please let me know, because in almost all the trades, there's a need for people to pitch in and make it happen. Because without that, the money is just not going to last. It's really crucial that that happens. And the farm across the road of 42 acres was given to the camp. So that's the next thing after Oakview Lodge, to say, God, why did you give us this? What a blessing. Someone just wrote out a check for $352,000 and we bought it. It's as simple as that. Just I didn't ask the person or anything. It just, they heard about it and God laid it on their heart. And they said, we care about reaching even more children and maybe in a different way, unique way. So the board is having a retreat here in November, praying about what God wants us to do with that property. Incredible potential over there as well. But the bottom line, it's still about the children. It's still about caring about one at a time, reaching them the gospel so at the end of their lives they can say, yes, I know the Lord. I am following him, and I met God at camp, and it's made all the difference in my life. I think about one story, about a tragic story, about a girl 12 years old in Philadelphia. In the backyard of her house, she was brutally raped in the backyard of her house. Even worse is that her own mother was in the house when it happened. Her own mother was in the house while her daughter was screaming. So where is she? Her mom was in the house, but she was in a drunken stupor. She was having a hangover. She was passed out from taking too much of too much of too much. And she couldn't hear anything. She was in a drunken stupor. And I'm like, if I could see that mother, I'd shake her and say, what are you thinking? Your own daughter needs you. What were you thinking? How could you ever live with yourself after doing something like that? You're her mother. And then God really rebuked me. He says, Phil, you're just like that mother. How do you mean? And God says, sometimes you're just so busy back in your office at camp. You're running around doing all kinds of important things. You don't even know who's there at camp. You don't even know what they're dealing with. You don't even know what's going on in their hearts and lives. You're so busy and preoccupied, you don't even hear the screams from their heart so often. because you're too busy doing important things. Is that where you're at also? We're too busy doing so many important things. We don't got time to go to Lancaster on Mondays. We don't got time to do those things. We don't got time because we're in a stupor of busyness. And we're missing the things that are most important, aren't we? Are we? So what's God calling me to do? What cry is he calling out for me to be there and to be his hands and feet and heart, to walk alongside of them, show them they care? Maybe it means coming down to volunteer in the kitchen. Maybe it means adopting one of these children and spending time with them. Maybe it means going to Lancaster. Maybe it means telling the girls that go in there, say, I will pray for you the 3 hours you're in there Monday night. What is God calling me to do? Lord, bless you really good. Thank you again for this privilege of being here. Sorry about the little snatches here and there, but we got through it, Tim. Yes, sir. Thank you again for your part and partnership at camp. May the Lord bless you. Doug?
Sing that chorus, I'll say yes, Lord, yes. I'll say yes, Lord, yes, to your will and to your way. I'll say yes, Lord, yes, I will trust you and obey. When your Spirit speaks to me, with my whole heart I'll agree, and my answer will be yes, Lord, yes. How many wish for an adult camp? I love to go to camp. And how many of you have been spoken to this morning of lessons from children, how they apply to all of us and challenge our own lives? A lot to ponder and think about. Well, we're going to take a break. We're going to take a 10-minute break. Normally here we have a welcome time, but just include that in your welcome time, whatever else you need, a bathroom, a drink. And for 10 minutes, we'll take a little break, and I'll call you back. And we'll go on with the rest of the service. So Lord bless.